Wow, that's a really cute stick for a ring pull.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, where'd you get it?
Well, you know, last winter I was kind of bored and I started befriending the local avians.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, I've been, you know, feeding them, trading them for stuff, yeah. And they bring me cool art projects such as stick through a ring pull.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
It's really cute. I mean, it's great. Although, I must be honest, like, when it started, it was a handful of sunflower seeds, and I might receive, like, you know, just a shiny bottle cap or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But, the prices have definitely been going up. You know, now it's more like an entire box of seeds, or even, like, a multi-pack of suet balls. And I will receive something like this beautiful piece here. Now, I'm not denying, beautiful bit of Corvid art there, but, you know, it's, the price of microtransactions are really going up. Greetings, strangers, queer and pleasant. I'm not Laura Kate Magnetdale.
And I'm not Jane Aerith Magnetdale. And welcome to another episode of Queer and Pleasant Strangers. It's a podcast where two queer trans women, that's us, we're wifey types, have a bit of a catch-up about media we've consumed in the week.
We do.
How are you doing?
Doing all right. I'm a bit worried that Smudge is about to sit on the wrong part of the mouse and maybe end the recording, but it seems like we're good.
Yeah, it's probably fine. It's probably fine.
Still, the line's still moving, so I think it's fine.
Well, that's good. You know what else is still going? Things we've consumed media-wise in the week, including things we've played.
Oh my god, that's us. We do that. Tell us about a thing you played.
I've not played a lot this week that I can talk about. It's been one of those. Oh, secrets. I've been playing stuff. Not a lot of it is stuff I can talk about. I can talk about one new thing that I've played a little bit of. I've not played nearly enough of it to know sort of where it's going, but I am intrigued by what I've seen so far. And that is a game called Life Eater.
Okay, this sounds like a 160-hour sprawling RPG with radio towers and an open world. Right.
So this is a game from the person who made El Paso Elsewhere, which was a
psychedelic
nightmare. A sort of PS1 visuals inspired kind of game about fighting your way through a whole bunch of gunfights while dealing with drugs and emotions. And this new game, Life Eater, it's being marketed as a serial killer simulator, and that's kind of what it is.
Okay.
The gist is, it's very similar to a plot that I think was a plot for a Black Mirror episode in the last season, in that you are playing as basically some, the kind of guy you'd imagine wearing, like, a trucker hat and a sleeveless shirt, like, living in a trailer in America.
Okay.
And he, for 20 years now, has been directly receiving messages from God, telling him that the world will end if he does not do a murder and do a ritual sacrifice to this God, then the world will end.
Right.
So, it is a game of surveillance and working out how to get the information you need, not just to kill the target, because that's the easy part. It's collecting enough information to be able to do the ritual for your god well enough that you know all the weird little bits of specific information that change how the ritual works. Like,
right. Oh,
do they sleep less than 6 hours a night? Remove their left lung. Do they have a commute to work? Do this with them. If they, you know, if they have no children, remove their 11th rib.
So it's really in-depth Hitman?
Kind of. It's more of like a spreadsheet management game, mechanically.
Manager.
Kind of. So, I've played like the first couple of days, so there might be more to it than this. I literally got it today and played a bit of it before recording. But the first, like, to give the first case as an example, you have a timeline of this person's upcoming week.
Right.
And there are a bunch of gaps where you don't know what they're up to. You know they're doing something at that time, you don't know what it is. And you have to balance time and suspicion and, like, getting noticed to collect information. And that basically means clicking on chunks of time in the timeline, sort of looking like a video editor screen, like clicking on clips, and deciding how you're going to try and get information about that chunk of time. And usually the trade-off in the options you have is it going to take me longer, or is it going to make me more likely to be noticed by the target?
Right.
And you have, like, a limited amount of time that God is like, you must do this sacrifice by this time. But also, if you get caught too much, you're gonna miss your opportunity. They're going to get too suspicious. You're not going to be able to do it.
Hmm.
So you're deciding, like, oh, do I, you know, do a friendly hello while mowing the grass? Or do I, like, try and break into their house and install a keylogger? And the bigger the chunk of time is, the more likely you are to have to do something that you're gonna probably get noticed to a degree to get that information.
Right.
So, like, bigger chunks of time are more difficult to get the information about what that chunk of time involves.
Right.
And going into, like, the second investigation, there's then two timelines, and you're trying to work out two people's schedules because you've got to get two murders done within the one time limit.
Ugh. Bosses, eh?
Maybe there'll be...
One of your subjects that's receiving messages about killing people goes out sick or goes off, and all of a sudden, you know, then they won't hire extra people to fill in the gaps, but, you know, you've got to...
Yeah, and there's things that, like, I've started to see some other mechanics layered on that are things like, oh, if you find a pink chunk of time, that is one where... if you haven't yet gotten certain information, you can get it very easily from interaction with this. So finding those early on can be really beneficial. I am not sure I'm going to be able to play a lot of this game, purely because there is a good degree of memorization involved.
Right.
Because you have, like, the timeline, and you have to sort of have in the back of your head, I know roughly what the criteria for the sacrifice are.
Right.
And I'm, like, looking for them. Like, a really obvious one is, do they have black hair or not? Is a criteria that changes what you do during the ritual.
Right.
And that's usually, like, given information. So that's a pretty easy one to remember. But you're having to remember, like, oh yeah, one of the things the ritual needs to know is, do they use the bathroom more than twice a day?
Okay.
And you're having to, like, remember all that information while you're in the editing phase to go, yes, I've definitely found all the information I need. And I'm, like, ready to go do the murder. Like, I don't need to keep risking trying to unearth more clips.
Mm.
And then remember what you saw in those clips when you get to the screen that's like, do the ritual. And you're like, ah, did they go to the bathroom more than twice a day? Did I remember to check that? Is that information in my head?
Mm.
That's something I struggle with.
So one to sit with a notebook.
Yeah, I think if I play more of this, it is going to have to be a sit with a notebook open kind of game, where, like, at least from what I've seen so far, and maybe this will change, the ritual itself hasn't yet changed. So I could probably just have, at the moment, a page that is the things the ritual is looking for, and one page which is tick or cross per checkpoint item for the person I'm currently looking into. Mm. It is an interesting concept so far. I have questions, and, like, my big questions around it are concerning safe representation of mental health. Because
concerned with video games?
Yeah, because my question, and I don't think this is a silly thing for me to be concerned about, is, like, the reason I referenced that Black Mirror episode... mild spoilers, there's an episode of Black Mirror with this concept where it does seem to be a real thing that's happening. But in stories like this, it's always a concern that, like, maybe God is not really going to end the world if these sacrifices don't happen, and it's, oops, person with a mental health condition was just being a murderer.
Mm.
Which we've come across this in... There was one of those escape room in a box kind of games we played.
Oh, God, yes.
That had a premise like that. And obviously, I don't want to just, like, jump and spoiler myself on this, but also, I think a big part of, like, this is, I kind of need to know if that's where this is going.
Mm.
Because I've seen that story done really poorly a number of times.
Yeah.
And... this developer has generally been pretty good about stuff. I would expect it's probably not that. But, you know, I have a little caution about this game.
Mm.
I'm intrigued by it. Mechanically, I don't know how well I will get on with it. but I'm intrigued by what I've seen so far. What about you? What have you played this week?
Well, I've played a couple of little things, a couple of little indies. Yeah. First one I want to talk about is Goblin Fandango, which was an entry for Ludum Dare a couple of years ago, I believe. And you play a goblin whose entire landmass civilization was destroyed by humanity, and the humans came and they built their castles and their villages and their wells and so forth, and destroyed everything that was goblin kind. And you seemingly are the last goblin, and you have a torch and a vendetta, and your mission is to basically go and burn down everything the humans have.
Oh!
So you start by burn down house, or burn down castle. Here is goblin, here is castle. It's got like a nice little tutorial for how do thing. Here is goblin, here is castle, set fire to castle, congratulations, castle has been set fire.
Nice and simple. To the point.
Okay, here is a villager's house, and a well, and a castle. Now, if you try and set fire to the castle, the villager will keep going to the well and trying to put it out. And you can set fire to the villager before they get to the castle, and they'll run back to the well and put themselves out, but they will keep coming back. Mm. Alternatively, you can sort of very carefully and strategically burn down the villager's house, at which point they will run off to the castle and not come out, so that you have freedom to burn down the castle.
Okay.
And as the mission goes on, there's eventually knights, and knights will just properly fuck you up if you get too close for too long. And you've got to sort of work out how you can position things. Eventually you get the ability to drop pitch, which you can set fire to and create little walls.
Okay.
And it's a case of, like, how can I work out the best way to burn down the optimum number of, like, individual homes so that I can get to the castle and successfully get it burned down in the shortest possible time limit. And eventually, like, maybe there'll be, like, bridges protected by knights, so you've got to, A, get across the bridge to get to the next area, but is it better to wipe out all of the villagers' homes systematically so that you can make sure that by the time you get to the end, you're not being overwhelmed by a bunch of villagers you left their homes off just so that you could burn down the castle?
Yeah.
It's a fascinating concept. You can play through it in about 40 minutes, the whole thing. There's, I think, like 12 levels, and it presents a fascinating challenge, and it's an odd little concept that was done as a game jam thing, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And the other one I want to mention is Forlums, which I can't remember what this was for. I think this was just another game jam, and it's what if you had like a column style game with like colourful crystals that are falling. They're in a block of four. And you can press, like, Z to rotate them one way, X to rotate them the other way, and then you just, like, move them left and right. And you're trying to make, like, sets of three, and diagonals will work, and vertical and horizontal lines will work, and you can get combos and stuff, and you're getting a score from that. And eventually you get you're getting, like, new crystals added to the ones that you've been seeing so far to add extra difficulty. And then you get a set of crystals drop down that are very different to all the others. And then just a whole bunch of fascinating stuff happens. And I won't spoil it for anyone who might want to give this a try. It's free on itch.io. Same with Goblin Fandango. And, yeah, they are... it's a fascinating little game. And that is does some interesting things with what could easily be like, I know columns. It's just columns, but with rotating things, which I think was more of a like a Puyo, like the four things rotating in a square, rather than columns, which was generally a set of three up and down, and you can rotate them, rotate which order they're in.
Yeah,
but yeah, I had a lot of fun with that. That was over in like 10-15 minutes, but. Just a great idea, and it's got some really banging tunes in it, and lovely chip tunes. That's a couple of little things. What about you? Got any others?
We played a thing together.
We did.
Oh yeah, we played at least one thing together at the weekend. We played some Great Western Trails.
We did.
Second edition. Which we've talked about this board game before. It is one about trying to travel across the country and then sell cows.
No, not sell the cows.
Sorry.
The cows want to go on the train and they will pay you to escort them across the Badlands.
Yes, that is what's happening. Sorry.
Cow friends.
Yeah, it's traveling across the country, sort of building up your little bases and collecting your workers and collecting a whole assortment of cows and whatnot. And this is the second edition, which has reduced a little bit of the not great stuff about Native Americans that was in the first edition.
Yes, they've replaced the Badlands area with, instead of being like Native Americans, with being just bandits.
Yeah.
But the problem, as I think we mentioned last time we talked about Great Western Trail, is that it then becomes a game about the American West without any Native American representation whatsoever.
Yeah, it swaps one problem for a different problem, but probably a preferable problem.
Agreed, yeah. I think the game itself is really good fun. I think it's fascinating.
Mm.
I feel like maybe they should have just gone for an entirely different theme, maybe.
Yeah.
That would have worked.
Just abstract it to some kind of different setting where, like, we don't have to go, this is real world stuff we're dealing with.
Like, I know there are at least two other versions of Great Western Trail now. One's Great Western Trail Argentina, and the other one is New Zealand.
Hmm.
And the New Zealand one's about sheep. I don't know how it deals with bandits. You have to get past a wetter. deal with a fucking wetter. Hope for that, I guess. I don't know. I haven't played it. Yeah, it's got various ways you can build an engine here because it's got trains. You've got three different types of people that you can hire from the shop that is refilled every time someone goes to Kansas City in order to drop off some cow friends. And you are sort of, when you go, you have a chance to put three new things out onto the board. Mm. Are they going to go, are you going to be putting more hazards out, making certain areas more difficult to get down? Or are you going to put a particular type of person out? And throughout the game, it depends when you put them out into the buy people area, that's going to potentially mean that they cost less. So is that going to help you more? Is that going to help your opponent or opponents more? Because this plays up to four. Then you've also got, like, which route do you go? Do you get, like, loads of cowpokes so that you can do more things at the cattle market area? Or are you going to go more for, builders so that you're putting more tiles out onto the board? Potentially, those will individually score you points at the end. You're also slowing down your opponents because you can generally only move a certain amount of spaces. Yeah. And by putting more things out onto the board, you are slowing them down, meaning that it's going to take them longer to get from A to B or indeed wherever else. And the buildings that you build are going to have potential benefits. They might be free movement. They might be ways of getting other things cheaper, like you're getting extra staff or building new buildings or moving your train further along the track. Because the whole thing about the train at the top of the board is you're trying to drop the cows off further and further along.
Yeah.
Because to drop them at the very earliest point is actually really bad for you because you lose points at the end of the game, but you will get a decent amount of money. And if you try and pay to send them on longer journeys, that you are going to essentially be charged extra for how much further you want to push them along. So ideally, you want to be pushing your train along a little bit. You want to be getting slightly better cows to have in your hand, because you only start with a hand of four cards and some very basic cows that don't have any endgame scoring rewards. And there's like five of one and three of three different other types of cow.
Yeah.
And when you're going to Kansas City and you're basically putting your hand in, that hand can't have any duplicates because you won't score for the duplicate. So you'll only get for one of however many of those of that type of cow there is. And you'll only be getting based on how big your hand is. So eventually you've got ways of expanding your hand, you've got ways of moving further. There's all sorts of things you can do by manipulating your board, by manipulating what things you're putting out, and it is a fascinating engine builder that's not too heavy, not too dense. Like, it feels like it'd be reasonably easy to teach.
Mm.
Like, I don't even remember if we watched a video to learn how to play this originally.
I don't remember, it's been a while.
The manual's pretty good.
Yeah.
And, it's a good fun game, and I'm glad that they've at least tried to acknowledge a lot of the problems with the first edition. But yeah, it's a good, fun game, and I'm glad we've had a few more chances to play it recently.
Yeah.
And what about you? Have you played anything else?
The only other thing I've played that I can really talk about is I've been playing Mobile Archer. It's been my downtime in between stuff I'm playing for work kind of game, and I'm getting real deep in on it.
Yeah.
I'm on the penultimate difficulty for one of the deck types. I've gone back and I've started playing other deck types and trying to raise the difficulty on those.
Okay.
I love playing. There's a deck that's just like half red cards. It's half hearts and half spades. It takes out the diamonds and clubs, but duplicates the hearts and spades, which I love playing that with flushes. But I learned today there is a very powerful joker you can get that's really good for flush scoring decks.
Right.
But to unlock it, you have to win a run on any deck at any difficulty, never playing a flush. So I'm currently trying to complete a run never doing a flush at any point to be able to unlock the flushes get real good joker.
Ah, interesting.
So I'm starting to get into the seeking out, are there good jokers that would enable the strategies I like doing that I can be unlocking in certain ways that are in playstyles I haven't bothered with yet?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm real digging Blatro. It's so stripped back to just quickly put the things together and watch a number go up and hope it do good.
Yeah, it's very, very Moorish. Very one more run. Just one more run.
Yeah.
And unless you're having like a really successful one, usually you'll know quite quickly, it's just like, this isn't working. I'll restart.
You'll get like into like the second or third ante out of eight and go, I've not yet had anything that's like a good thing that's like properly getting my point scoring moving. This run just ain't happening.
This is not working for my particular deck or particular jokers. And RNG plays a lot into that. But luckily, you usually know quite quickly, and you're not wasting a huge amount of time when things are going wrong. But like, it's weird how much it can balloon when you are having a really successful run. Like, I was streaming it a couple of weeks ago, and I think, like, I was like, oh yeah, well, you know, we've probably got half an hour left on the stream, it's probably fine to go, and I think we ended up going like a full hour. But that was I think my very first win of the game. And it's like, yeah, this is good, this has gone well, and we could all tell it was going well, and it was fun. But you can have like quite long stretches of things just not quite working out, especially if you're trying to do with particular decks. Like, I keep trying to do runs with the deck that has no face cards in it.
Oh.
And there's really only a couple of jokers that you need to get, like, properly started with that. And I just have not had the luck to get into them.
So, I am using that one as the one I try and do to do a run with no flushes in it. I'm trying to do, basically, all straights. Grumble. Also, on Steam, there's a mod you can get that changes straights to be called gays.
Yay!
And that's, I approve. But yeah, because it's a condensed list, that it's far more consistent to get straights in it. And then trying to do stuff like increases the multiplier every time you play the same hand, and like trying to find like maybe turn as many of my cards as possible into a couple of suits that I get multipliers off.
Yeah.
But then you've got to try and avoid making it accidentally into a straight flush, because I don't know if a straight flush counts as a flush in terms of... I don't think so, but I don't know enough to feel safe doing it.
No, I would think that counts as a flush. I would think so.
Maybe. But yeah, it's a real good, easy going dopamine factory. What about you? You played anything else this week?
Played a new board game.
Ooh, yeah, you did.
Yeah, I played Healthy Heart Hospital 3rd Edition. This is a game I've been looking for a while, because it was one that was mentioned in, by one of the board game channels I watch a lot, and they were talking about, like, just I think it was their personal top 100. And very often with things like that, for like professional board game reviewers, you tend to find there are like problems with that, because they will have games that are just out of print, especially if they've been doing it for a while. Like, people were talking for ages about a game called Legends of Adrift System. And it sounds absolutely fascinating and very much like my thing, but also completely out of print for a really long time.
Yeah.
Now, of course, I realise the bigger problem with that is that it's, like, four-player. Same with, or three-player minimum. Sidereal Confluence is another one that people mention a lot. That's got a 4-to-8-player minimum. Or 4-to-9-player. Like, that's just never going to get played. Like, we have maybe one game or two games like that, and they get played so rarely. Like, we have Betrayal Legacy, which has been kind of difficult to get to the table, and Oath.
Yes.
Which is a great game, but it does not play well into player.
Yeah.
Even with the Clockwork Prince Automa, it's a lovely idea, but it just does not quite work. But, I've been enjoying Healthy Heart Hospital. You are basically doctors and an administrator. That's basically your like, first player marker, or your leader for the round, I guess. Mm-hmm. And you'll be handing the administrator back and forth between each other. In solo, you just control everybody. There's no real turns. You just sort of strategize between yourself. And I can see in certain groups how you could end up with someone like absolutely quarterbacking this.
Yeah.
If they are allowed to do so, because it is a little bit like Pandemic, where technically you don't really need all of the other people, but you're playing with other people because it's nice to enjoy video games, board games with other people and enjoy the fun of that. But you will have, each of your doctors might have, like, they'll usually have two specific bonuses. Things like, they're very good at, they'll basically pull two extra cubes out of the bag if it's a particular type of patient, or on their, or if they're on a particular type of ward. Like, someone might be really good at cardiology, so they'll be pulling extra cubes for that. And then they might have a secondary bonus, like, if the negative cubes come out of the bag, they get to pull one extra cube out, and that will hopefully save it. You never know. You're also strategically building extra rooms, so that could be like an emergency room, because if you have patients in the waiting room and they get too endangered by the time you're trying to, or even able to see them, then you basically, they would die on the in the waiting room, but you can send them straight to the emergency room and have, like, a little moment extra to try and treat them.
Okay, yeah.
Because basically, between each round, you've got two waiting rooms, you're drawing six cubes out of a bag, and potentially more if you pull out black cubes. The black cubes will basically make you pull two extra cubes. So potentially you would just have loads of people dying in the waiting room, with no chance to have even seen them. Because it's an interesting balance that you can't transfer someone onto ward during your turn, unless they are at least level 3 or 4. But if they become level 4, if they become level 5 while in the waiting room, and you haven't got an emergency room or space in the emergency room, they'll instantly die.
Okay.
And people who die in the waiting room cost your hospital money, because you have to pay, like fees to the family and so forth.
Yeah.
But also, equally, if there's something happens where they die on the ward, then that's technically even worse, because it costs you more money. Or if they die in a critical care treatment room, potentially that will cost you even more money, but you do have more chances to heal them, and you will make more money for having healed them. But it's a real balance of doing things that cost money, while also not dropping to zero, because that's an instant fail. Sometimes you'll have, like, your administrator will have things that cost money. Sometimes you'll have, you'll hire extra staff, which will give you, like, extra abilities, and that will potentially cost you money. Then you've got all the risk of people dying. Then you've got the risk that if people have died on wards, those discs are being used as tombstones in the graveyard. That can't be used unless the administrator does a thing that turns it into a different type of disc, so that you can then start pulling those people back onto wards and trying to heal them. It's a lot to think about, but despite being a game where you are pulling cubes out of a bag, there are a lot of really interesting ways that you can manipulate that. Because very often something like quacks can feel really unfair.
Yeah.
Because you're only adding like one or two extra chits to the bag every round, and there's already like seven or eight things in there you don't want to be pulling out. So you're really not super improving your odds in that game. But with this, anytime you can look in the bag and go, what's in there? Like, what's the spread?
Mm.
Like, the only time you can't look in that bag is when you're literally pulling things out. So give it a rummage and go, like, okay, yeah, we've got a patient in psychology. I know that I have mostly psychology cubes in the bag.
Yeah.
This is the perfect time to go, we're going to try and pull that. Or you go, there's mostly black cubes in the bag. This is the time for the administration to do research. Because when they pull black cubes out, those black cubes basically let you pull more cubes out and could give you more benefits. And that's really, really good. So I've been enjoying that. Like, there's been a few times I've been like, ah, fuck, yes, there was mostly yellow cubes in here, and that's why I needed to heal my infectious disease patient, but just wasn't getting quite the right things. But I haven't had a complete failure yet in two games, and enjoying it and looking forward to getting some time to play together.
I'm looking forward to that too. It sounds interesting, and I always enjoy a good cooperative experience.
Yeah, and also it's been nice to try something a little bit lighter, because I do lean very more towards like medium to heavyweight games.
Indeed.
But I think it was recently the fact that we played through Sebastral and Hive and some of the other more like lightweight, smaller box games. It's like, yeah, I do enjoy these. And the problem was never the weight. It's just sometimes there are games in the lightweight category that feel like they are more designed for a younger audience.
Yeah.
And lean very heavily into that. And it's like, I want a game that's like a little bit like that. I want the challenge. I want the meatiness to it. But also it doesn't have to take 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm very much enjoying that so far, and I will report back further once we have played a little bit more.
Yeah.
Only other thing I want to mention is Planet Crafter. Planet Crafter 1.0 is out now.
Oh, yes, this one that you've been periodically jumping into the early access for.
Yeah, I think we had like a year, maybe a year and a half of early access on this. You are sort of sent to a planet. The plot eventually is revealed that you've basically been sent here to serve some sort of time. It's never quite explained. Basically, it was you can be sentenced to eternity in prison, or you can go and try and terraform this planet. And if you do well, that will be time taken off your sentence. If you die there, oh well, nothing of value was lost. According to whoever is in charge in this game. And it's fascinating. I enjoy the sort of solitude of being stuck on this planet and solving all these problems and discovering new things. They put a load of really cool automation stuff in. So you just like fill your chests with various materials, and as long as they are near your like particular automation machines, they can be processed into other things that you will be useful to you. There was a whole drone system that will like pick up and deliver from your mining facilities back to your base or wherever things are being processed, and that was like a really cool addition. They put in this whole procedural wreck system, because the thing is basically when you first discover a wreck, it will populate all of the chests in that wreck with things that are appropriate to the level that you are at that time in the game. But if you happen to, say, have discovered all the wrecks quite early on in the game and not realise that is how that mechanic works, potentially you are making it so that you are unable to get better stuff, the better stuff. And the solution for that seems to have been that basically you're going to be able to build portals that will take you to a little mini area with a crash in it that is procedurally generated and will have stuff appropriate to the level that you are at that point.
Okay, so there will always be a way to access the stuff if you don't have any other way to.
Yeah, so there's no way, there's no chance of accidentally destroying all of your stuff and being completely unable to proceed. I mean, that wasn't really a possibility before, but it makes the game much more consistently playable and potentially leaving you with less opportunity, like less chances to have got completely stuck, which I appreciate. Thus far, I haven't noticed a lot of difference with the 1.0. Like, I have just started a new save. I haven't got, like, super far into it. But thus far, I am still seeing a little bit of the not-quite-polished stuff that has been present throughout the development. So I don't know if I'm super happy with that. But ultimately, I have had, gosh, I think, like, nearly 60 hours in this game.
Ooh.
Across... now starting onto four saves, probably even longer than that at this point. So I can't complain. It was only, like, I think £15 when I picked it up. I don't know if they have increased the price any now that it's in full release. But there is certainly a lot more content in it. It is fun. If you are into taking this fun, isolated adventure and adding multiplayer, they added multiplayer.
Ooh.
So you can do that now. And apparently there's animals. There's mammalian life on the planet now that you can get to, and I've just started a new save for specifically for the 1.0, and I haven't seen all of that yet. So I will report back once I've got a bit further in. But I am glad to see that another game that I bought in early access has actually come to fruition, because my goodness, there's been a few years of like, oh yeah, this is just never really proceeding.
Yeah.
Is that everything we played then?
I think so.
Well then,
time for this.
Do you want to know how I made a fortune from the comfort of my own living room? Was it some kind of dropshipping thing or MLM? No, that's a stupid idea. Hi, I'm Random Guy. Join my online seminar, which I've artificially created limited access to imply that it's more popular than it is. To find out how, with just some stock footage, a green screen, and a few buzzwords, you could convince wannabe tech bros that starting MLM dropshipping business services is all that it takes for them to be as rich as the people in the stock footage of people in suits laughing in slow motion in a steel and glass office penthouse appear to be. It has to be true. I even paid for the version without a watermark.
Oh, hey, baby.
Meow.
Hey, kitty. We're just going outside. We're just popping to the shop quickly. We'll be back in like 5 minutes.
No.
Sorry?
No, outside.
Well, it's just for a minute.
No minutes. Stay here.
Well, no, because I can't, because...
I just got comfy.
Yeah, you did, I know. But also, there are things outside that are required. Like, we need to go to the shop and get stuff, and it's... I mean, maybe that might be included, but it does mean we have to go outside for a minute to do that.
Can you not call the person who brings all the pizzas to bring me some dreamies?
No, they don't have dreamies at the pizza place, and also it's good for my physical health to go for a walk every now and then and get some fresh air.
Why don't you get the zoomies up and down the living room like I do?
Yeah, it's not the same as being outside in the fresh air. I know that we don't let you outside in the fresh air, but...
I'm not allowed outside. You told me off when I get outside.
Yeah, because we've got keys and stuff. Like, we're fine to go outside.
Well, where
but...
are my keys, man?
You have
where
no...
are kitties?
You have no pockets to put them in,
or
thumbs with which to turn them.
Maybe I should be furnished with a tiny fanny pack. Meow.
Well, you don't have thumbs to turn the keys.
Well, then maybe a door for a cat.
Look, that's not what we're debating. We just gotta go out for a minute, but we will be coming back like right after. It'll be like 5 minutes.
Stay here, then. I don't know what minutes is. I don't have any concept of minutes.
Okay, well, go for a quick zoomie, and by the time you get back, we'll probably almost be back.
But what if you don't? What if I never see you again?
I promise you, we'll see you again.
You always say that I can't go outside in case I get hit by a car. You can't go out in case you get hit by a car. And also, I am on lap, and lap is where I am, and you cannot go now.
Okay, how about this? Here is a single dreamy. Right there. Okay, I'm on!
So,
what have you put in your eyes?
Oh, do I have
do
a...
I,
do, Do I have a recent media obsession to talk to you about?
Tell me about your recent media obsession.
So, years ago, I started watching an anime that at the time, I think like three, maybe part of a fourth season was out, and it was called My Hero Academia.
This is the one with the frog giant.
Yeah, with the frog super, yeah. So, the gist of the show is, it is set in a world where, like, this hasn't always been the case, but for a few generations now, about 80% of humanity is born with superpowers of some kind. Some mm-hmm. more banal, some more sort of more impressive. And no one really knows why this started happening, but as a result of, like, of this happening, supervillains and superheroes started to become a thing, and, like, being a professional hero became, like, a job profession someone could go into.
Okay.
And it follows the story of Midoriya, who is this kid who grows up desperately idolizing the world's greatest hero, All Might. He is very much your, like, Superman-esque figure, like the untouchable symbol of peace. Like, if anyone's going to take down the villains, it's them.
Mm.
Specifically, always does so with a big smile on his face. And this kid's like, I want to be just like him when I get my power and grow up and be a hero. And then he finds out he's in the 20% of people who will never get a power and just don't have a power.
Mm.
And despite the world, like, telling him, you know, you cannot be a hero without a power, he refuses to believe that. Like, from a very early age, like, even his mother is like, I'm really sorry, your dream cannot happen. You cannot do this. And he's like, no, I don't care that I don't have a power. I want to do the right thing and save people. And the show starts with various things come together, but the gist of it is he saves his childhood bully from being attacked by some big monster despite having no power. He doesn't care that he has no way of he doesn't know what he's going to do when he gets there, but he just runs towards him because, like, I need to help, I need to do something.
Mm.
And his childhood hero happens to see him doing this while other heroes are stood around not acting, and he's like, hey kid, my power is special, I wasn't born with it. It was given to me, and I can give it to someone else.
Oh,
I'm going to give you my power, and you're going to be the next great hero.
Huh?
So it starts off as the journey of this person suddenly having a power, trying to work out how to catch up with his peers and live up to the legacy of this quite important power that he now holds.
Mm.
And a lot of the early stuff in the show, like through the first like three or four seasons, really centers around this power is physically a lot to handle.
Mm.
To the degree that, like, when the show starts, his use of the power is very all or nothing, and, like, the first time he tries to throw a punch, every bone in his arm and hand breaks.
Ooh.
He suddenly has all this power and not quite enough. He's got to work out ways to use it safely without just, I accidentally broke every arm and bone in my body and can't continue the fight.
Yeah.
So it is this, like, what if you had all the power in the world to save people, but were just not quite ready to handle...
My body is too fragile.
Your body is not quite ready to handle the greatest power in the world bursting out of you all at once.
Mm.
So, like, those first three or four seasons, very much, like, slice of life, superhero school kind of story,
yeah.
Building up the world. A lot of very interesting, like... superhero powers developed, a lot of really nice character development between the cast.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of where I had stopped watching. I think I'd watched it at the point where it was releasing weekly. And I was like, ADHD, I'm not going to fucking remember to watch weekly episodes. And I suddenly, I saw somewhere that the final season of that show is about to start. So I went, you know what? I'm going to get up to date on My Hero Academia.
Mm-hmm.
And in the course of maybe two seasons and a movie, this has gone from, this is a pretty fun, I quite enjoy this show, you know, it has its moments of greatness, but, you know, it's a fun show, to, I know it's still got a season left and it could shit the bed, but this might be my favourite anime ever.
Yay!
And I there's a lot of things that come together in how I want to talk about that. So first of all, there is a movie that I watched called My Hero Academia, Heroes Rising.
Mm.
It is a movie that is technically canon, but everything in it is never acknowledged in the series, and everything is like, and that person forgot what happened for this reason, and this for all these reasons, it's never going to get brought up. It's one of those kind of things.
Right.
And I absolutely fucking love it. Caveat, it made me really concerned to watch the couple of seasons that would follow it. Without getting into a lot of specifics, this movie is, from what I have been told, originally this was the plan for how My Hero Academia was going to end.
Right.
And they do some very, very high stakes. If this was how the show ended, there would have been big dramatic consequences that felt earned, that felt like the victory was achieved but not without loss, that, like, it. I watched it and went, this was absolutely fucking perfect. I'm quite concerned to watch the rest of this show now because I know this isn't how it ends.
Hmm.
And in my mind, watching it, I went, I can't imagine a better ending for this show.
Hmm.
It is everything that I so often wish stories wouldn't be afraid to do.
Yeah.
Having proper serious consequences, accepted willingly by the protagonist, knowingly followed through on in a way that is the narrative has supported that happening.
Hmm.
That is sad, but in a way that it's like, even if it wasn't the way you always imagined, you're saving people the right way in this moment.
Hmm.
It's a fascinating story. Absolutely fucking gorgeously animated. There's like a fight scene toward the end that's like maybe 10 minutes of some of the most gorgeously animated fighting I've ever seen. And then it gets sort of undone, kind of, and we're just not going to talk about it. And I went into seasons 5 and 6 of this show going, I don't know that they're going to be able to do anything as satisfying as that. And I was proven wrong.
Yay!
I was proven wrong.
A rumble.
Seasons 5 and 6 of My Hero Academia have been considerably more, like, dramatic. They have ramped up the stakes of that show a lot. Seasons 5 and 6 are a very different show. They are not necessarily better or worse, they're just very different, in that a lot of the slice-of-life superhero school relationship-building groundwork is done.
Mm.
And it's like, cool. The big bad we've been threatening, time for the big bad stuff to happen, and it's going to be a lot worse than you were ready for. Go. Oh. The sheer scope of, like, the... For a show that was very much about, like, gradual change and growth, a lot of things have happened very quickly, very dramatically to the state of the world in that show. None of it felt rushed. It's all felt like it's had its time to breathe. I am really, really impressed with it. It is a show that, while its first few seasons are definitely funny little goofy adventure, oops, caveat, there's one character that's a bit obsessed with women that you have to apologize a little bit for in the early seasons.
Mm.
You know, in that kind of it's anime kind of way. But when the shit hits the fan, this show has done an incredible job of raising its stakes in a very, very believable, dramatic way. It's fantastic. I've literally just finished watching it, and I'm already like, I could restart from the beginning of season one, because there's so much stuff that got foreshadowed that I now want to rewatch through and watch for and see how it was set up, because, oh, I've come across little moments of realizing that this show is very well thought through in its foreshadowing. A very, very, very spoiler free thing I can say is there is a character who there's a dramatic reveal that his hair is dyed, and the first time he shows up he's in front of a hairdresser's, and I'm like, that's, you fucking knew what you were doing.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by a lot of the weird foreshadowing in this show, but yeah, My Hero Academia, I've gone through a roller coaster this week of this is amazing, oh god, is this show gonna let me down? No, apparently not.
Well, I'm glad it's going well.
Yeah, I'm very curious to watch what I believe is the final season coming up,
heck.
Which starts airing in a couple of weeks.
Oh, heck.
Ooh. What about you? What have you been watching this week?
We watched a thing together. We've started watching the Fallout series.
We have. How many episodes are we into that?
I know we've got 2 episodes left.
We're all but 2 episodes done.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, that's a surprisingly good show, that live-action Fallout.
I mean, to be honest, I have picked up Fallout knowledge by osmosis.
Mm.
I tried playing Fallout 1 and 2, and I was getting a lot of weird tutti-frutti effect, and it was impossible to actually see or play properly. I don't know what that problem with that particular PC was, but I never managed to get around that issue. Apparently it was quite common. I played about 20 minutes of Fallout New Vegas. I watched the intro. I made a character. Spent a really long time making the character. I had a little chat in the first house that you wake up in.
Mm-hmm.
I walked outside and was immediately killed by what I'm fairly certain now was a radroach. And, and then the game crashed. And I was like, well, no autosave. So none of my progress was saved, none of my character was saved, and I have to do all that again. And potentially it's just going to crash again because apparently everyone knows in the community that Fallout New Vegas is just very prone to crashing. I was like, well, I can't be arsed, and I uninstalled it, and I've never gone back.
I don't blame you.
But it's a shame, because I've heard great things about it, and I'm like, I really want to give this a try, but maybe I'll give it another go. Maybe someone will have done more fixy things since the last time I tried fixy things.
There's a lot to love in those games, surrounded by a lot of weird, janky things where I wouldn't blame anyone not enjoying them or having a bad experience with them.
Extraordinarily a Bethesda engine.
Yeah.
Yes. It's weird how much I do know about this series, I guess. because we've been sort of casually talking about it while watching it, it's like, yeah, I mean, like, I know, I've heard of a Deathclaw.
Yeah.
I recognise the Power Armor and the Brotherhood of Steel as a faction. I recognise the Vault Dwellers and Pip-Boy, and I know of ghouls.
You've osmosised the iconography of it.
I've osmosised quite a lot about Fallout, but this, I think, has done a good job. I've heard a lot of people saying that this series does best when, like, playing real Fallout, that it just avoids the fucking plot. The main storyline.
Yeah.
I've been enjoying it. I'm curious where it goes. From what I can tell, it seems to sit quite well with that, like, there was a lot going on with all the different vaults, and a lot of it was pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
And maybe naive character that we've been mostly following for the series so far is really like the perfect person to have not understood what the vaults really are.
Yeah.
Compared to even members of family and so forth without getting into spoiler territory. But, enjoying it so far. It's fascinating. It's, you know, a weird fucked up Western, but there seems to be a lot of that with weird post-apocalyptic dystopia type shows and things. But, yeah, I have been enjoying it. We talked a little bit about when it first started about how brutal it is.
Yeah.
It's quite the gore fest, but I think the reason I've had less of a problem with it than I did with Monkey Man is that it's so over the top that it's just like horseshoe theory to violence back round to just almost comical.
Yes, it's not like lingering, pained, realistic violence. It's quick bursts of, you just turned on the blood fountain for half a second and then cut away.
Yeah, you did literally just paste someone's brains up a wall or shoot someone's entire foot off.
Yeah, it looks like you threw a jar of ragu up the wall.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't take that seriously.
No.
Cool.
But, don't get me wrong, it's made me go, ooh, and but also, like, be, like, just the almost, like, nervous laugh of, yup, that sure did happen. That sure was a lot. And, I'm enjoying it so far, and I am curious to see where it goes. I think we need to watch it quickly, because I am already getting lots of people wanting to talk about the final episode. I'm curious, And hopefully we can get to it before...
Yeah, we're going to need to binge a couple of episodes tonight after... maybe watch the last couple after recording this.
Maybe. Maybe. But yeah, it's... I feel like we're... We, as people who consume that part of the internet of people in what is the current cool media to yeah. be into, we're about to be bombarded with people who want to pick it apart and assess it and talk about it.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, like, visually it's very interesting. The set design's fascinating. I am curious about where all these threads are going to tie together and whether or not it's going to have a proper conclusion or whether it's going to be too busy fishing for a second season. But, yeah, visually stunning, some amazing character design. Like, I haven't seen enough Fallout to know actually about enemies. Mainly about, like, personal interactions with things. But yeah, enjoying it so far. Have you watched anything else?
No, that's it for me, really. It's mainly been a week of binging 2.5 seasons and a movie of My Hero Academia.
I think that's a healthy amount of My Hero Academia.
Yeah, yeah. Like, other than that, I've also simultaneously been trying to rewatch Haikyuu, the volleyball anime, because there is a movie coming out soon, and that's making me go, oh, similar situation. I watched all of Haikyuu at the time up to where the anime finished, or maybe up to where the dubbed anime finished, and was like, okay, I'll remember to watch this weekly. I didn't. So I'm trying to get back to my volleyball anime. The format, it's very sports anime. Person who really wants to do the sport, but maybe is not naturally inclined to do the sport, but really is going to try hard to do the sport, joins a team with, you know, maybe a person they don't get on great with, but they'll bond through the sport, kind of stuff.
Mm.
Of the things that fill that niche and genre, Haikyuu is definitely my favorite sports anime. It is, it's very, very full of heart. It doesn't waste too much time getting to the fun character interactions of the team.
Mm.
It has a good healthy dose of very underdog main character who can do something amazing, but that's not a get out of jail free card. It is a inconsistent thing that needs to be worked on and practiced. I love that show very much. It's very good.
Yeah.
What about you? You been putting anything else in your eyes?
That's pretty much it for me.
Well then, time for this.
Hey, Laura.
Yes?
We've got a new sponsor.
Who's our new sponsor?
Well, do you sometimes think, I know what's going to happen?
I sometimes have a sense what's going to happen in some situations.
I have a 3-to-1 chance of guessing
I'm not usually that specific. I'm usually like, I have a vague gut instinct.
Do you think that you would go, my vague gut instinct? I would like to make money off that vague gut instinct.
I don't know about that. Who's our sponsor? What's going on?
This week's sponsor is megabet.lol.net.bet.
Lol.net.bet, you say?
Indeed. Do you want to bet on the results of everything?
Everything?
Everything! From sports results, to the day's weather, to the results of the fight in the anime you like, to what I'm gonna make for dinner.
How do they know what you're gonna make for dinner?
To when Smudge is gonna next sneeze.
How do they know this?
To when you will next see something adorable that will make you go, oh!
How are they going to verify these results?
There's an app. It requires many permissions, apparently.
Ah, okay, I see.
So if you want to bet on all of those things and get 20... It doesn't actually say what, but 20 free spins.
Oh, uh-huh. I guess it's got slot machines as well.
Yeah, make money, good odds, freebies to draw you in. Huge cash prizes, blah, 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 blah. What's this? Hang on, I'm going to zoom.
Okay,
zooming,
okay.
zooming. Okay, I'm about 6,000 times magnification. Please gamble responsibly. I think... Oh, we weren't supposed to say that bit on the recording. But there's megabet.lol.net and
don't do it.
Why do we keep getting these awful sponsors?
Oh, God.
Inside the boardroom of Supremacy Software.
Hi.
Hi.
So, oh, I got stuff we gotta dig through today.
Is it a ton of money?
It's a ton of money, but it's also complaints because we took a ton of money.
Don't care, ton of money.
I know, but they're getting real loud about it.
Oh.
So, you know how we got that that big Call of Duty tournament happening soon?
Hell yeah.
And you know that we're hosting it in Saudi Arabia because they paid us a shit ton of money to do that?
They did pay us a shit ton of money.
They paid us a shit ton of money from the Please Rejuvenate Our Nation's Image Fund, and
yeah.
That's a lot of money for us.
Exactly. If someone has money and they want an image rejuvenated, what better way than Call of Duty?
Exactly, but apparently, yeah, hosting a tournament in Saudi Arabia is bad because women don't necessarily feel safe coming and playing, and LGBT people don't necessarily feel safe coming and playing because
I mean, that seems like the perfect place for gamers because, you know, that's how generally we have trained our audience to treat women in the LGBTQ community.
Agreed, but apparently, not every competitive Call of Duty player is a straight white cis man.
Huh.
Yeah, I'm as surprised as you are, and some of them who are, like, you know, competitive players that people pay attention to are going, "Oh, woe is me, I don't feel safe coming playing in the tournament, that Call of Duty's to blame."
Is there not something in the EULA that we managed to slip in that's like, you can't say anything bad about the game, or we'll ban your account?
I mean, at this point, that feels like it would be, it would not be helping our case at this moment.
Damn it.
I have been told by legal.
God damn it.
It's not illegal, but like, you know, it would, what was the phrase? It would put a very expensive triple premium unleaded gasoline on the fire.
Not even the leaded stuff.
Yeah, so, wow. What are we gonna do? We need to find something we can offer to placate them, because we're not pulling out of Saudi Arabia. We need the money.
Right.
Because it's money.
What about some cosmetics? Something we can throw together in like 5-10 minutes.
I mean, we could take the ones that like we had for that Pride Month thing.
Right.
And go, you can have them back, not during Pride Month, as long as they also have a little sticker on them that says, "Call of Duty not responsible for these views. Please don't take the money away, Saudi Arabia."
I mean, that feels like that should cover us. I assume we've run this by legal, right?
Yeah. Like, I'm pretty sure as long as, you know, they feel like we're denouncing it, and, like, the gays maybe feel like we threw them a little bone, maybe they won't be mad that they can't, you know, travel to the tournament because it's not safe for them.
You are a fucking genius.
I know.
So, what have you put in your ears?
I put one new song in my ears I can talk about.
Tell me about the ear song.
I finally found enough brain to listen to some new music, and a lot of it was, like, not worth discussing. But I did find a track called Fuck All These Fucking Fascists.
Excellent.
By a band called The Muslims.
Cool.
Which is a, by their description, an all black and brown queer Muslim punk band.
Nice.
With a title like Fuck These Fucking Fascists, the lyrics are very direct, as you would expect. It is lyrically what you would expect.
Mm-hmm,
it's got a very Nazi punks fuck off kind of vibe.
Excellent.
But the sound is not nearly as directly angry tone-wise as I might have imagined. It's very danceable, bouncy punk. Very melodic. Like, it's got a little of, just a little smidgen of that ska kind of influence where you'll have, like, breakdowns with unexpected instruments. Occasionally all the instruments other than a handbell at one point will drop out. And some interesting vocal distortion over the vocal melody. It is a very danceable, melodic, builds to an anger at the end, but like it wants you to be energetic and dancing while you tell these fucking fascists to fuck off. It's a good, fun track.
Nice.
I want to go listen to more music by The Muslims.
Hmm.
That one track caught my attention real quick, and I'm like, yeah, I want to see what else you're doing. So yeah, that's my music recommend for this week.
Hell yeah.
What about you?
I've been re-listening, I should say, to an album called Straight From The Underground by, let's see if I can get this correctly, Tiny Waves and Friends.
Ooh.
This is an album released under the Game Chops label. You might have seen them on YouTube. They do lots of like remixes or lo-fi versions of like video game music. There's the like Zelda and Chill albums, which are various tracks from throughout Legend of Zelda history done as chill hop or lo-fi or synthwave type tracks, and very very chill, very calm, very very good. Good for putting on in the background of playing video games or board games rather. But the album Straight from the Underground is, well, it's entirely about Undertale.
Yeah.
So you've got a lot of remixes and stuff. There's a lot of entries from Ben Briggs, who is probably most common for doing a lot of that stuff. I think this is the album that I got Collecting Junk with Temmie from.
Yeah.
Which the version on SoundCloud is actually better than the one on the album, but I think that's because they used a sample that is from Futurama, because it's the "Shut up and take my money" line.
Yeah.
It's in there. The line is in there, but the actual line from Fry has actually been turned way, way down in the mix compared to the version that I'd originally heard and made me fall in love with. I could listen to that track on repeat forever. It's really catchy.
Mm.
So nice work to that. There's also Straight from the Underground, which from IQ and Ben Briggs, which is just a rap about a love for the game as a whole, and also just like thanking Toby Fox for making it.
Yeah,
that's very cool. I'm big fan of that. It's certainly enough that I bought the album.
It's a good album.
It's a good album, and it's nice to come back to periodically, even though I have never successfully played Undertale.
Yeah,
I played probably for about 90 minutes to 2 hours, I think. I got because I was trying to do a pacifist run.
Yeah.
Because I was aware from the outset that was a thing that could be done and would get you the best ending. And I got to a point where I was really struggling with one particular fight, which meant that I was having to go back to pick up health from like a save point to reset my health. But then having to like re-go back and do that bit because I wasn't killing anything, so I was technically having to do the same fight again, and very often ending up exactly health-wise back where I was.
Yeah.
But not able to proceed, which is not the most fun version of that.
If you ever want to go back to it in a, like, when you were like, I want to see through Majora's Mask kind of way, I'm happy to be quiet co-pilot that will only chime in if you're like, okay, what do I do on this one?
I just don't think I have the reaction speeds for I guess it's bullet hell technically.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, I just don't have the reaction speeds for that, and I'm happy to just enjoy the spin-off stuff that other people have made and listen to the soundtrack album and spin-off soundtrack albums rather than forcing myself to play something that is just beyond my skill level.
That is fair.
Well, is that everything you've listened to?
I think so.
Well then.
Time for this.
I've got to work all this out. Oh, bloody nonsense. Kids again causing all the problems. Obviously moved on from millennials now is Gen Z.
They're all the youth.
There's anyone.
They're not having children, are they?
Exactly. They're not having children, and I suppose it's probably the TikToks.
Oh, yes, probably the mobile phones.
Violent video games.
Probably the transes.
Oh, always definitely the transes.
Always the transes. Yes,
always the transes. Never did that when I was a child.
You don't think that maybe it's sort of impractical to have children in a shared house that you're sharing with six friends that is still costing you 85% of your wages, and maybe you don't have any benefits or any way of supporting or raising a child, and also the fact that all the government benefits are either impossible to get or just no longer exist, full stop?
No, that's really bloody ridiculous.
Phonograph records and such.
No.
Are you a trans person living in the UK or USA?
Yeah.
Due to the climate of general shittiness to trans and non-binary people, you may be entitled to snacks, a juice box, a big soft blankie, and forehead kisses.
Ooh.
That's right. Thanks to Enough finally being enough, the intolerant left party are moving to take radical action. But since you've been on the receiving end for long enough, you can sit this one out in a cozy blanket burrito while we stamp out the hate, scapegoating, and bigotry from corrupt leaders and their hard-right backers. The intolerant left. So much for our predecessors. Do you know what I want to see more of?
What do you want to see more of?
Racial justice warriors.
Racial justice warriors?
Yeah.
Right, Larry.
Right, Barry.
How you doing?
Oh, you know, doing my best, mate. It's been a little wetter than I would have liked. I saw the sun a couple of days and I thought, oh, that's really perking the old mood up. But then we really have gone back to cold and wet again, innit?
Yeah, we're in that typical British period of is it spring, is it winter? You can't decide. It's not halfway between. It's both at once.
Well, yeah. I thought I saw hail this morning, to be honest.
Oh, goodness gracious.
It's not great. You doing all right, mate?
Doing my best. Trying to keep up. But, yeah. You know, dismayed at the state of the world as ever, you know.
Exhausting, mate.
Because obviously, you know, there was that stuff the other week with the Cass review, with the bloody bollocks of the UK trying to basically discredit every bit of scientific paperwork that says that transition is good for trans people. Throw that all in the bin and go, we're only going to take these two things that say, you know, they're inconclusive, and use that to try and throw out, you know, youth healthcare for trans kids.
Yeah, dedicating an entire page to graphs about detransition, and the actual data for that graph came from a Reddit post on r/detrans that was a poll in what I'm told is basically a community that is absolutely filled with people pretending to be G-trans to skew attitudes on that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah, you can go look through there and it's very clear that a lot of it is just fucking troll accounts. But, you know, that got considered, but apparently, you know, studies by medical professionals, oh, no, you didn't peer review lower surgery.
It wasn't double blind.
Exactly. But the point being, the predictable fucking happened, because of course it fucking did, which is it took like less than a week after that for the newspapers to start doing the rounds on, oh, maybe we need a Cass review, but for adults, trans healthcare. And it's the clear fucking thing. It's the, you know, it was never about protect the kids. It's get rid of all access to healthcare for trans people, because you go in with the think of the children, and as soon as you've made that little inch of movement, you go, cool, take away adults as well.
I mean, trans people have been saying that they are the wedge issue for a long time, and as with most wedge issues, they will start with think of the children and then go from there. You know, basically it seems that what they really want is just the complete eradication of, I guess we'll start with the LGBTQIA+ and work from there, I guess, is what I believe the current aim seems to be.
Goodness gracious.
Constantly accused of being hyperbolic, but, you know, I hope that people are starting to say that maybe there is something to that.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I've been being as loud about this as I can, because it's not new. We've been, trans people have been saying this for fucking forever, but, like, people need to hear yet another example is happening. This is an attempt at systematically taking away all trans healthcare, and that cannot be allowed to, you know, to go ahead.
No.
And being loud about what is happening is the only way people are going to know.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully the people are still listening. You know, I know that's how difficult it is in our current world for people to stay engaged with, you know, anything that is quite this stressful and damaging for such a prolonged period of time. And people have been talking about this sort of thing since the review potentially for the Gender Equality Act, was what, 5-6 years ago now, and that ended up being basically just 2 years of people dragging up more and more and more transphobia. And obviously now we've had
this review, quote unquote, that spent so long saying that it was unbiased but refused to take any reports from trans people because they would be too close, but yeah. All trans people's families, again, too close, but, you know, quite willing to take money from the people who literally wrote laws for Ron DeSantis about how to get trans healthcare banned in Florida. So, I think we can see that there is a bias. It's just bias in the way that they want it because what they are aiming for, and as I've been saying it for, you know, a good while now, is transgenocide.
Indeed.
Thanks, young mate.
Yeah.
Good hug, mate. Good hug.
Yeah. Right, I think I'm going to have a little lie down.
Oh, sounds lovely.
Nice, nice. So, Laura.
Yes?
Tell us where people can find the things that you do.
People can find the stuff that I do at Laura K. Buzz, pretty much everywhere on the internet. Laura K. Buzz on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, Patreon, that's the one that pays the bills, Blue Sky, Mastodon, TikTok, all the things. You can find me at Laura K. Buzz pretty much everywhere.
Oh, bless you, Smudge.
You had a little sneeze from
Smudge. A little sneeze.
Oh, you sneezed yourself awake. Well, what about you? Whereabouts are you on the internet, Jane?
Well, I don't have to sneeze or unified branding. So I have a link tree. It's linktr.ee/janeiac, J-A-N-E-I-A-C. You can find all the things I've written and t-shirts I've designed and music I've made. All of that good stuff and all of my socials as well. And you can help support me at patreon.com/stonedmonkeyradio. Little as a dollar a month. It makes all the difference and it's very much appreciated. So Laura, I think that's everything. Can you sing us out, please, dear?
Until next time, be a stranger.